Our first Christmas tale this morning is a tale from England written by Gervase Finn, who was an inspector of schools. As part of his responsibility, he often read the Christmas story. From the Other Side of the Dale, by Gervase Finn. Now on the run-up to Christmas, I met Monsignor Leonard again. I arrived at the small Roman Catholic primary school at Netherfoot the week before the school broke up for the holidays. I had volunteered to narrate the Christmas story to the infants, but never reached the end. Dominic, a massively freckled boy with spiky ginger hair that stood up like a bathroom brush, positioned himself at my feet on the small carpet in the reading corner. To say Dominic was hyperactive would be an understatement. He was lively and interested, and his questions and comments came fast and furious. I began, it was dark and cold that December night many, many, many years ago. And on the hillside where the icy winds whistled through the dark trees, I can whistle, said Dominic, puckering up his lips. And the grass was frosted and cold. Do you want to hear me whistle? No, not now, I don't, I said, perhaps later. I continued with the story. Matthew, the little shepherd boy, huddled in a dry hollow with his sheep to keep warm. The cold winter wind blew about his ears, and high above him, the dark sky was studded with millions of tiny silver stars. Miss Sterling gives you a star if you do good work, said Dominic. It wasn't that sort of star, I said. These were like tiny diamonds sparkling in the darkness. This was the night that a very special baby was to be born. Jesus, said Dominic. That's right, it was Jesus. I've heard this story already, exclaimed Dominic. I know what happens. We all know what happens, Dominic, I responded, and we are going to hear what happens again. Why? Because we are. At this point, I caught sight of the priest quietly entering the classroom and positioning himself unobtrusively at the back. Now, very soon, a special baby would be born, and his name, as Dominic has already told us, would be Jesus. Was he induced? Asked Dominic. Pardon? I said, was baby Jesus induced? No, he wasn't induced. I was induced. Well, baby Jesus wasn't induced. How do you know? Well, I know because it was a long, long time ago and they didn't induce babies then. Why not? Just listen to the story, Dominic, and then we will all find out what happens. But I already know what happens, he replied at this point. A little girl with long blonde braids and an angelic face raised her hand. What does seduced mean? She asked. Oh, dear, I replied wearily, catching sight of the priest and the teacher attempting to stem their laughter. I will tell you another time when you are much, much older. Now, let's get on with the story. And then, amidst the tiny diamonds that sprinkled the dark sky, there appeared a great shining star, a star that sparkled and gleamed with such a wondrous, brilliant light that, how much did he weigh? Asked Dominic. Who? The baby Jesus. I've not got to the baby Jesus yet. I was an 8-pounder. My granny said I was like a plucked turkey. Dominic, I said very quietly and slowly. Now just listen to the story. You're spoiling it for all the other children. I know how this story ends, he replied, undaunted. Then why don't you come out and tell the story, I said, throwing in the towel. And so he did. Like a seasoned actor, taking center stage, he came out to the front of the class and recounted the Christmas story in such a simple, animated, and confident way that we all listened in rapt silence. Once upon a time, there was a man called Joseph and a lady called Mary, and they were friends, and they played games together and had fun. Then they had a wedding, and after the wedding, they went home, and then they had some lunch and a drink, and then they set off for Bethlehem on their honeymoon, and they went on a donkey. When they got to Bethlehem, there was no room at the inn, so they had to stay in a barn round to the back. And then Mary had a little baby, and she called it Jesus, and she put him in a manger, and all the animals were around him, and the big stars shone up in the sky, and then the shepherds all came, and then the three kings came, and they all gave him presents because it was his birthday, and baby Jesus had plenty of milk because there were lots of cows about. There was silence at the end of Dominic's story. Then he looked at me and said, "Okay?" "Okay," I replied. "Very okay." On my way out that morning, the little girl with the blonde braids and the angelic face approached me shyly. "I liked that story," she said quietly. "Did you?" I replied. "I'm glad. Thank you for telling me." "But Dominic tells it better than you." "Merry Christmas." Monsignor Leonard, who had been watching and listening, placed his hand gently on my arm. "There is an old proverb," he said, "which goes like this. Here's to the child and all he has to teach us." The Christmas Story is for the man who hated Christmas, by Nancy W. Gavin. It's just a small white envelope stuck among the branches of our Christmas tree. No name, no identification, no inscription. It has peeked through the branches of our tree for the past 10 years. It all began because my husband, Mike, hated Christmas. Oh, not the true meaning of Christmas, but the commercial aspects of it. Overspending and the frantic running around at the last minute to get a tie for Uncle Harry and the dusting powder for Grandma. The gifts given in desperation because you couldn't think of anything else. Knowing he felt this way, I decided one year to bypass the usual shirts, sweaters, ties, and so forth. I reached for something special just for Mike. The inspiration came in an unusual way. Our son Kevin, who was 12 that year, was on the wrestling team at the school he attended. Shortly before Christmas, there was a non-league match against a team sponsored by an inner-city church. These youngsters, dressed in sneakers so ragged that shoestrings seemed to be the only thing holding them together, presented a sharp contrast to our boys in their spiffy blue and gold uniforms and sparkling new wrestling shoes. As the match began, I was alarmed to see that the other team was wrestling without headgear, a kind of light helmet designed to protect a wrestler's ears. It was a luxury the ragtag team obviously could not afford. Well, we ended up walloping them. We took every weight class. Mike, seated beside me, shook his head sadly. "I wish just one of them could have won," he said. "They have a lot of potential, but losing like this could take the heart right out of them." Mike loved kids, all kids. He so enjoyed coaching Little League football, baseball, and lacrosse. And that's when the idea of the present came. That afternoon, I went to a local sporting goods store and bought an assortment of wrestling headgear and shoes and sent them anonymously to the inner city church. On Christmas Eve, I placed a small white envelope on the tree, the note inside telling Mike what I had done and that this was his gift from me. Mike's smile was the brightest thing about Christmas that year, and that same bright smile lit up succeeding years. For each Christmas, I followed the tradition. One year, sending a group of mentally handicapped youngsters to a hockey game. Another year, a check to a pair of elderly brothers whose home had burned to the ground the week before Christmas, and on and on. The white envelope became the highlight of our Christmas. It was always the last thing opened on Christmas morning, and our three children, ignoring their new toys, would stand with wide-eyed anticipation as their dad lifted the envelope from the tree to reveal its contents. As the three children grew, the toys gave way to more practical presents, but the small white envelope never lost its allure. The story doesn't end there. You see, we lost Mike last year due to cancer. When Christmas rolled around, I was still so wrapped in grief that I barely got the tree up. But Christmas Eve found me placing an envelope on the tree. And in the morning, it was joined by three more. This is Christmas Day in the Morning by Pearl S. Buck. He woke suddenly and completely. It was 4 o'clock, the hour at which his father had always called him to get up and help with the milking. Strange how the habits of his youth clung to him still. 50 years ago, and his father had been dead for 30 years, and yet he waked at 4 o'clock in the morning. He had trained himself to turn over and go back to sleep, but this morning it was Christmas. He did not try to sleep. Why did he feel so awake tonight? He slipped back in time, as he did so easily nowadays. He was 15 years old and still on his father's farm. He loved his father. He had not known it until one day, a few days before Christmas, when he had overheard what his father was saying to his mother. "Mary, I hate to call Rob in the mornings. He's growing so fast and he needs his sleep. If you could see how he sleeps when I go in to wake him up, I wish I could manage the milking alone." "Well, you can't, Adam." His mother's voice was brisk. "Besides, he isn't a child anymore. It's time he took his turn." "Yes," his father said slowly, "but I sure do hate to wake him." When he heard these words, something in him spoke. His father loved him. He had never thought of that before, taking for granted the tie of their blood. Neither his father nor his mother talked about loving their children. They had no time for such things. There was always so much to do on the farm. Now that he knew his father loved him, there would be no loitering in the mornings and having to be called again. He got up after that, stumbling blindly in his sleep, and pulled on his clothes, his eyes shut, but he got up. And then on the night before Christmas, that year when he was 15, he lay for a few minutes thinking about the next day. They were poor, and most of the excitement was in the turkey they had raised themselves and mince pies his mother had made. His sisters sewed presents, and his mother and father always bought him something he needed. Not only a warm jacket, maybe, but something more, such as a book. And he saved and bought them each something, too. He wished that Christmas, when he was 15, that he had a better present for his father. As usual, he had gone to the 10-cent store and bought a tie. It had seemed nice enough until he lay thinking the night before Christmas. He looked out of his attic window. The stars were bright. "Dad," he had once asked when he was a little boy, "what is a stable?" "It's just a barn," his father had replied, "like ours." Then Jesus had been born in a barn, and to a barn the shepherds had come. The thought struck him like a silver dagger. Why should he not give his father a special gift too out there in the barn? He could get up early, earlier than 4 o'clock, and he could creep out into the barn and get all the milking done. He'd do it alone, milk and clean up, and then when his father went in to start the milking, he'd see it all done, and he would know who had done it. He laughed to himself as he gazed at the stars. It was what he would do, and he mustn't sleep too sound. He must have waked 20 times, scratching a match each time to look at his old watch, midnight and 1:30, and then 2 o'clock. At 2:45, he got up and put on his clothes. He crept downstairs, careful of the creaky boards, and let himself out. The cows looked at him, sleepy and surprised. It was early for them, too. He had never milked all alone before, but it seemed almost easy. He kept thinking about his father's surprise. His father would come in and get him, saying that he would get things started while Rob was getting dressed. He'd go to the barn, open the door, and then he'd go get the 2 big empty milk cans, but they wouldn't be empty or waiting. They'd be standing in the milk house, filled. "What the?" he could hear his father exclaiming. He smiled and milked steadily, 2 strong streams rushing into the pail, frothing and fragrant. The task went more easily than he had ever known it to go before. Milking, for once, was not a chore. It was something else, a gift to his father who loved him. He finished. The 2 milk cans were full, and he covered them and closed the milk house door carefully, making sure of the latch. Back in his room, he had only a minute to pull off his clothes in the darkness and jump into bed, for he heard his father up. He put the covers over his head to silence his quick breathing. The door opened. "Rob," his father called, "we have to get up, son, even if it is Christmas." "All right," he said sleepily. The door closed, and he lay still, laughing to himself. In just a few minutes, his father would know. His dancing heart was ready to jump from his body. The minutes were endless. 10, 15, he didn't know how many. And he heard his father's footsteps again. The door opened and he lay still. "Rob?" "Yes, Dad." His father was laughing, a queer, throbbing sort of laugh. "Thought you'd fool me, did you?" His father was standing by his bed, feeling for him, pulling away the cover. "It's for Christmas, Dad." He found his father and clutched him in a great hug. He felt his father's arms go around him. It was dark and they could not see each other's faces. "Son, I thank you. No one's ever done a nicer thing. Oh, Dad, I want you to know I do want to be good." The words broke from him of their own will. He did not know what to say. His heart was bursting with love. He got up and pulled on his clothes again, and they went down to the Christmas tree. Oh, what a Christmas, and how his heart had nearly burst again with shyness and pride as his father told his mother and made the younger children listen about how he, Rob, had got up all by himself. "Best Christmas gift I ever had, and I'll remember it, son, every year on Christmas morning so long as I live." They had both remembered it, and now that his father was dead, he remembered it alone. That blessed Christmas dawn when, alone with the cows in the barn, he had made his first gift of true love. This Christmas, he wanted to write a card to his wife and tell her how much he loved her. It had been a long time since he had really told her, although he loved her in a very special way, much more than he ever had when they were young. He had been fortunate that she had loved him. Ah, that was the true joy of life, the ability to love. Love was still alive in him. It still was. It occurred to him suddenly that it was alive because long ago it had been born in him when he knew his father loved him. That was it. Love alone could awaken love. And he could give the gift again and again. This morning, this blessed Christmas morning, he would give it to his beloved wife. He could write it down in a letter for her to read and keep forever. He went to his desk and began his love letter to his wife. My dearest love, such a happy, happy Christmas.